guys, you are listening to the Fanta Wrestling Show here on the FOW Radio Network. I am Patrick with Danny Danger, Mika Villas. We're back after another week hiatus. No more food poisoning for me, and we are ready to talk some wrestling this Wednesday night. Of course, probably this will air sometime Friday or Saturday. Guys, how are you all doing?
Yeah, the Pan Cup is going on. All the indies are pushing for their big shows for the week before WrestleMania. Times of the wrestling year, and we are here for it.
It's like Christmas on the way to a bigger Christmas. You're right. So much wrestling, so many things happening in the world of both professional and independent grappling. I'm excited. Let's go.
First, we're going to talk about the big show just happened in WWE, Fastlane. Of course, taking the Fastlane to WrestleMania. And man, what a show did we get. More pleased than I thought I'd be for this show. And let's go ahead and just break it down. And let's start with the pre-show match. In the kickoff, we had New Day. Big E and Xavier Woods defeat Shinsuke Nakamura and Rusev in a tag team match. I usually don't watch the kickoff shows, but this one I ended up watching, and I thought it was a pretty good match. Here with the New Day with a little extra humph with the travesties that have been placed upon good brother Kofi. But I enjoyed the match, and Shinsuke Nakamura doing the honors, of course, here for taking the big L for his team. What do you guys think about the kickoff show?
I mean, I don't really don't pay attention to the kickoff show apart from the matches. You know, I still don't really get the whole team of Nakamura and Rusev. Like, they were fighting and they were blood enemies, and they had that miscommunication that caused Lana to get injured and tweak her ankle and not be able to compete in the Royal Rumble. But like, then they just decide one day, okay, we're just going to be friends now. And they're a tag team and have been for several weeks. So I don't get the whole dynamic behind them. It kind of feels like they didn't really have much else to do. But yeah, seeing the New Day come out with a little extra grit behind them was cool. Usually they kind of, you know, like to play around a little bit. They were all business looking to make a statement.
Yeah, it was a New Day indeed. The New Day is more serious, more focused, more direct, more of don't take any of us for granted, because we're talented as hell. Nakamura, Rusev, talented as well. They've both had chances at singles titles and championships in the WWE. So I think the kickoff show was kind of that statement match to kind of remind everybody that all four of these competitors, but the New Day especially, have the skills to be champions individually. Rusev and Nakamura, I agree with you. That enemy of my enemy is my friend crap is kind of crazy, but hey, what can you do?
Well, who's the common enemy between them, though? They're each other's common enemy. They both got pissed that they dropped, you know, to Archer. Truth, neither one could beat him.
So next up, kicking off the main card, WWE SmackDown Tag Team Champions, the Usos, defeated Miz and Shane McMahon to retain the championships. It's a pretty cool match here, especially that one move where Shane McMahon went for his usual die from one turnbuckle to another, but one of the Usos, who I still can't tell apart, just went up in the air and caught him midair, dropped him there. So that was quite a thing. You know, Shane McMahon, you know, he's quite the bumper. He'll take some of these bumps. I don't understand why. you know, as the son of the owner of the Empire, I don't know why he does this. I can't think that it's because he gets pleasure out of it. But you know what? It's the McMahons are crazy. So Shane, like his dad, would not do it. You know, we'll do anything, whatever it takes. So they take the W, the Usos to remain champions, as I predicted. And post-match, when it looked like Shane was helping out the Miz, as they were going to be walking back, disappointed in losing this rematch. And after hugging Papa Miz, who was front row, Shane McMahon goes berserk and attacks the Miz, and you know, pummels him, and then puts him in what looked like to be a triangle choke variation, continuing to beat Miz. And yeah, so Shane McMahon, I guess, tired of having to carry the Miz, or tired of the Miz losing and making Shane, who's the best in the world, be lesser than. Of course, you know, cutting that promo 2 days later on SmackDown Live. What do you guys think of the match? And then the aftermath, the breakup of the greatest tag team in the world.
The match was fine. I felt the after stuff went on a bit too long, but I know they've been, you know, this is a storyline they've been building for quite some time since, you know, with Shane being the best in the world and then do the Miz. And, but like, honestly, those are kind of segments that I tune out of on the week. Big Miz fan. Like I get why the fans like him, but he doesn't really do much for me. Talk segments and the backstage stuff, them trying to get to Shane and the Miz TV and all this, I usually just kind of tune out or fast forward through. You know, and it's, but it's building into, you know, what will be one of the big matches, you know, for WrestleMania. I guess what was when they had the best in the world tournament. So it's going to be a big thing. It's going to be featured. The end segment just went a little too long. You know, he reaches over, he puts his hands on this, and then he keeps beating him up. And like, and then they just, is still there and they're helping him in the back, and like, this went a little too long, so I'm not really looking forward to that match at Mania. But you know, TV about it leading up to it, I assume.
The Miz is awesome. Are you kidding me? He's the best in the world. I know Shane McMahon thinks he's the best in the world, but I digress. The Miz getting beat up in front of his home city, in front of his dad. Great TV, great drama. You will see B-roll of that, I'm sure, on this season 2 of Miz and Mrs. on the USA Network. All that aside, match was good. Like you said earlier, Patrick, the coast-to-coast where Miz intercepts whatever Uso that was out of the air. Doesn't matter which one they are. They're twins. Kick one, the other one felt it. It's fine. That was interesting because we've seen Shane do the coast to coast before. We've seen the Uso do the splash or the leg drop or whatever the hell he was going to do at that time. It's all well and good. The moral of the story is, come WrestleMania, Miz gets to be in WrestleMania, and so does Shane McMahon. McMahon does these crazy bumps because he's an adrenaline junkie, because he grew up in this business. He likes expensive gym shoes, and he's a little bit loopy like his daddy, and this is how he gets his jollies. Vince likes to fire people. Shane likes to jump off stuff. He's a kid at heart, and we're going to see that come WrestleMania when he climbs on top of something, maybe the Empire State Building, and jumps off. We're going to see it. He's going to die live TV. It'll be amazing.
Let's hope no one dies, first of all. Second of all, Shane McMahon is the best in the world, and he's got a trophy to prove it.
What's today? It's Wednesday. No. Today's Wednesday. Miz has a trophy today. Right now, it's in Miz's custody because there is a custody thing. Miz has a trophy today. Shane gets it on the weekends.
It doesn't matter. It only matters who has it when they're on TV, and that's Shane O'Mac. Next up, Asuka defeats Mandy Rose to retain the WWE SmackDown Women's Championship. A brief match here, but it looks like maybe something's happening with Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville, and maybe not on the same page. It looked like Deville cost Rose the match there with Asuka trying to get involved. So a little dissension there. The match is all right. You know, Asuka was Asuka. There's not a lot going on in the women's division of SmackDown Live, so kind of you know, happy that, you know, Asuka is gonna, looks like she may be getting a little longer run with the belt. I think she definitely has pretty good matches to have, while everybody else, you know, with Becky and Charlotte are distracted with the Raw Women's Championship. But yeah, so that was the match. Asuka remains the champion. Who's ready for Asuka?
That's the big question, is, and I don't really know if they're really priming anybody to go straight for Asuka. She's the champion, but she's just kind of floating there. There's not really built up to look like a contender for her, apart from Mandy. And then she just beat Mandy, and then left some dissension between her, and it was a weird spot with her supposedly slipping on the apron. Like, first off, why is your foot going that far to the rope when you're running the ropes? And somebody that you could say for Asuka next, because you look at, like, Naomi's not really doing that much, and I don't know what's going on there on SmackDown. You know, Asuka gets the win, and I guess she continues to face Mandy or whatever's going on, because then on SmackDown, Asuka faced Sonya, and yet again, you know, like a miscue thing between the two of them led to Sonya getting beaten by Asuka. So Asuka as champion is unfortunately one of those champions right now where she's kind of the afterthought as to the other stories that are going on in and around her division. Which kind of hurts me, because she's so darn good. They could be doing a whole lot with her, but that's not the route they want to go right now.
They could and should be doing a whole lot with her. And the problem is, she's run through the TV ready girls in their opinion. There's tons of talent in the WWE pool, be it NXT and some of the new signees, be it even the SmackDown pool, if you throw her in there against a Naomi again. I think that the Asuka test for both Mandy and Sonya Deville was to see how good they look with someone who is really good. WWE wants Mandy Rose, of course. If you did not know, here's a spoiler alert. They want her to be the next Trish Stratus. They really, truly do. She has the look. They want her to have that wrestling skill, and she needs to be able to hold her own and look like she's holding her own against the likes of a world-class competitor like Asuka. The Mandy and Sonya feud will be... I made that noise. It'll be okay. It'll be whatever it is, I think. But the real story is Asuka is holding this title without a viable competitor. And I think the day after WrestleMania, if they maybe put her in a match, which I almost shudder to think we won't see her at WrestleMania unless they pull somebody really quick to build a program with. But I think they do like a weird Paige situation. Day after WrestleMania, you make a call up and have somebody come up and challenge from NXT Asuka for that title. They're high on Deonna Purrazza down there. And hell, it could be somebody who's not even in the NXT pipeline to show up on SmackDown Live and challenge for that SmackDown title. That would be the story. And that would give you life into a great competitor like Asuka.
Well, I would think that the way that we're seemingly going to be seeing so many multi-man matches is what it seems to that we're building to this WrestleMania. Like, we're going to have tag team gauntlets, and, you know, we can't just have the women's one-on-one for the Raw Championships. It's going to be a triple threat, and, you know, they're probably going to do a four-way again or a triple threat again for the U.S. belt. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if they did have the SmackDown Women's Champion featured, but just have it be like a triple threat, or have it be a 2-on-1 where it's Mandy and Sonya versus Asuka, and whoever gets the pin wins. But it could also be, yeah, that she just sits off the show because, you know, that's the WrestleMania is such a long show, but at the same time, when you have so many belts, you obviously can't have every single belt defended on every single show.
I mean, it's a long show. It's like 12 hours. They could, but again, you have to have somebody quote unquote worthy to put in there for a title to make it worth sitting that 6 to 10 minutes for. And right now they don't.
After this, we got a skit with Vince Kennedy McMahon and the New Day. He summoned the New Day to his office. They finally showed up and he said that he was going to make Vince McMahon, let me use pronouns, Mr. McMahon was going to make the WWE Championship match a triple threat match. And Kofi was going to be on the show and his match was next. Kofi comes out ready for the WWE Championship match. And out comes his opponents, The Bar, a handicap match. The Bar, Sheamus, and Cesaro defeat Kofi in a little over 5 minutes. New Day are banned from ringside. They still try to come out and help Kofi, but of course, Shinsuke Nakamura and Rusev put a stop to that. So, the plot thickens. The Bar sent as mercenaries for Mr. McMahon as he continues to put Kofi Kingston in his place.
Yeah, I mean, things like this were what took away from me some of the enjoyment of the show. Because it started to feel like just a regular episode of Raw. It didn't feel like a special event when you're having these skits and you're having match shakeups mid show. And like, then, you know, Elias comes out 4 different times during the show. You had all these scrambles. Like, it was an exhausting, the matches were decent, but like overall to me, Fastlane was just an exhausting show. Like, I was just worn out and the commentary was bad as they're arguing with each other the whole time. And because the crowd was so loud, they were having to yell. Then they're yelling at each other as they're arguing. Like, it was just And I you know, yet again, I get it's the Road to WrestleMania, and essentially this show is just another Raw. It's a Raw and SmackDown show just to push the matches that are going for WrestleMania. But things like this and the sketch and doing you the swerve there, buddy, you're getting beat up, and then like the other guy, you know, it didn't make it feel like it was a special event unto itself. It just felt like it was a normal episode of TV.
I got swerved. I was like, okay, Vince came around. Maybe, you know, we do this and Kofi just flat out loses and brings the crowd down or whatever. So it was like and I think maybe that's what they wanted to do, kind of give a roller coaster type of effect to, you know, what was going on. It was stupid when the handicap thing came out, and then, you know, the New Day comes out to try to help and they get jumped, and, you know, it's a long road to WrestleMania. There's lots of twists and turns, and we have to remember that this is Vince McMahon's playground, and he makes the heroes and the villains, and the fact that Kofi has become a hero seemingly without permission is not to be taken lightly by Vince. I'll give you maybe what you want down the line, a la Daniel Bryan, but we're going to play Vince's game. So we're in the middle of Vince's game, and what happens when we get to Mania, who knows? But yeah, it's drawn out almost to the point of ludicrousness, but what are we going to do? You know, stop watching? Nope. We proved that we're going to continue to watch and continue to talk about it, complain in some cases, and, you know, the WWE will go on in spite of our feelings on the matter.
Well, Kofi is going to get a chance, though, because as announced on SmackDown Live next week, he will be in a gauntlet match. And he needs to beat some of the best wrestlers on the roster to then be able to be part of WrestleMania and the WWE Championship. So the dream is not over, but anything could happen in the World Wrestling Entertainment, formerly known as Federation. Next up, we get The Revival defending the Raw Tag Team Championships in a triple threat match with Aleister Black and Ricochet and Bobby Roode and Chad Gable. This goes 10 plus minutes. The Revival retained. This was a pretty good match. You know, the tag team division, it continues to show when you put an emphasis on it and you actually invest time and the talent in it, it flourishes. And these guys have been putting up a heck of matches on Raw. And now you add Ricochet and Black to the mix, which, by the way, I hate that they're in a tag team, but whatevs. Revival retains. They're still the top guys, the champs.
This was it was an interesting match, but unfortunately, we had so many other matches like it on the show. As the show went on, you had so many scramble type matches that it made the show just tiring. I like this match. Yeah, the pairing of Aleister Black and Ricochet is strange. There's really no storyline reason behind it. They just kind of like threw them together once and then decided to keep throwing them together. And then now they're, because of that, then they're teaming in the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic on NXT. Like, but the team doesn't make any sense. They're just like, here's two guys that we're bringing up at the same time, so we're going to start teaming them together. But, you know, they make for interesting matches in the ring, so I guess that's ultimately what matters. The big thing is the Revival continues, but then you have all these other teams, so that's where I don't know if they're going to continue to do these multi-man matches all the way to and through WrestleMania for the tag team belts on Raw or not.
It was too much. It was a lot going on in the ring at one time. Black and the one and only as a team, everybody has a problem with, and I get it because we're used to them as individual competitors, and to have this tag team thrown together is kind of, I don't want to say a smack in our face, but kind of dumbs us down as wrestling fans again, which is what the WWE wants to do. They want to do things their own way. They don't care what people did before, or hell, looks like they don't care what even happened in NXT. When you get to the main roster, it's a whole new ball game. And thankfully, these two are getting a lot of television time and opportunities as a tag team. So I guess hopefully we can just look forward to down the line of them getting the same opportunities and television time once this tag team dissolves, which it has to. I mean, there's no way they're going to start wearing matching outfits like a real tag team. So it's only a matter of time before this thing goes, you know, away. You just have to ride it out.
Well, you mentioned that, you know, it doesn't matter what happens in NXT. And that's unfortunate. That's pretty darn true, because like when Samoa Joe won the U.S. title the week before on SmackDown, they were saying it was his first championship in WWE. Now it's his first championship since going to Raw or SmackDown. That's not his first championship in WWE. He was a two-time champion. He's the first ever two-time NXT champion. You know, but and that is WWE. I guess it's, you can shorten and you change things and you rewrite stories often as you want, I guess.
So next up, we have another multi-person match, a fatal four-way for the United States Championship. Now, originally, we thought we were getting Andrade versus Mysterio, but instead we got Samoa Joe defending the United States Championship against Andrade, R-Truth, and Rey Mysterio. And this also goes over 10 minutes. A little fun match with Carmella and Zelina Vega. They're also getting involved. Samoa Joe, though, picks up the win, remains champion. I kind of like this. I like the way that they're going with Samoa Joe here. It's a big, bad dude with the U.S. Championship. Great use of Samoa Joe, in my opinion. And, great way to utilize all these guys. Another multi-person match, though. Not the most memorable performances for these guys.
Fine, it was entertaining, but yeah, it's not something with as many multi-man matches as there were on the show. It's not something that that's going to be overly memorable. I like that Samoa Joe has a title, but I also, it kind of threw me for a loop when he won the belt, because I had assumed the wing was, since John Cena had already been announced as appearing for WrestleMania, but didn't have a match, that he was going to answer Roots United States Championship open challenge that he was going to have for WrestleMania. And then because the whole story with R-Truth now is he says that, you know, ever since he was a little kid, he idolized John Cena, but then they remind us that, like, Truth's crazy because he's like 6 years old. He's actually 6 years older than John Cena. So he obviously wasn't idolizing growing up as a kid because he's older than John Cena, but like it was his idea to do the open challenge because Cena did it. What would Cena do? So I thought it would have been a thing they would build to him versus John Cena at WrestleMania. But, they probably have big plans for John Cena than the United States champion. We'll see. I don't know what they're doing with the U.S. belt. I had hoped that we would just have a one-on-one with Andrade and Rey because I thought that we would do like a Lucha Apuestas at WrestleMania, do a mask versus hair or something between these two because they're just constantly at each other. But that may not be coming for quite some time. That may not be happening this year. As cool as my sounds, it doesn't appear that any of it's coming true.
It was a good match. I like the outside action with Zelina and Carmella a lot, but it wasn't. There was a lot happening, so it was hard to focus on one thing in particular. But Joe's a monster. Joe deserves a title, and I like Joe.
Next up, the WWE Women's Tag Team Championships are on the line. The Buzz and Hawk Connection defeat Nia Jax and Tamina to retain the championships here. The match is all right. Nothing blew me away. They did a good job, but what was of note is that post-match, Tamina and Nia Jax got in a scuffle with the Glamazon, who was at ringside, Beth Phoenix, and they attacked her, and out came Natalia for the save. She also got attacked as well, so are we possibly seeing here the return of the Glamazon? Because I'm here for it.
I mean, I'm a huge Beth Phoenix fan, and so yeah. So her coming back for another match with the Divas of Doom versus Nia and Tamina, I'm down for it absolutely. Natty comes out because yeah, they were the Divas of Doom, longtime friends, etc. And then as we saw on Raw, Beth still trying to kind of return the favor and see that Natty's outgunned against the two of them herself. So maybe we get Beth back in the ring one more time. Maybe not. Maybe she's just in Natty's corner. But yes, if the Glamazon does come back, even for just one match, I am 100% on board with that. She's got a phone call. She can't get in. No, she's out. Haters. That's what they do. The Usos' music, like I want to sing the Street Profits thing when it comes out because it's like this just generic hip hop beat, and like. When it starts and then it blast, like, you can't really hear what's going on. So in my head, I want to be like, I like the swag, like my body can, like all the whatever the Street Profits music is that's really annoying too. And just kind of generic. I still don't know what the use of penitentiary is.
Sorry, guys.
I still don't know what the Uso Penitentiary is.
I still don't know which one is which, so... And I took a photo with one of them. I don't remember who. I think I guessed, but I may be wrong. I think it's Jimmy, the one I took a picture with.
I think he took a picture with Jay. I think Jay's married. Jay's the not married.
Is John Jimmy?
Without John was Jay.
Start with Jay. Okay. Hang on. If you just want to spell a J-Y, or just say J for short for the letter Jimmy or John or James or Jehoshaphat.
Women's tag match. I was not expecting a title change at all. Boston Hug Connection. They've got those titles on lock, as the kids say here. The thing was, of course, Beth Phoenix standing ringside after Sasha Banks got launched over the announce table. They used Sasha as a lawn dart. That was funny and sad at the same time because her little butt flew. Seeing Beth kind of square off there against first Tamina and then Nia, it was cool to see because we never got like really a retirement for Beth Phoenix. Say, hey, you know what? I'm going to go make pretty babies with Edge. I'm out. So... if she comes back and she's already got a Hall of Fame ring, which some people say premature, but whatever. She comes back into a nice little feud with Tamina and Nia. That helps us to properly send Beth off, Natty at her side. Perhaps Natty gets a Hall of Fame bid, if not this year, then next year. Because let's be honest, Natty's been doing this for a long damn time, and it is getting that time. But I think maybe Beth is the type of competitor who definitely makes her competition look better and helps them to develop. Both Tamina and Nia need somebody that veteran status of Beth to help them be better performers out there in the ring. So it will benefit us as fans, but I think the biggest benefit will come to Nia and Tamina if this, well, when this comes to fruition.
Okay, so Nia, I could see because she's still only a few years in. Tamina's been there for so long, just like I'm perplexed. By why Tamina has been with WWE for 10 years, yet she's still just bad. She's flat-footed. She looks out of place and like she's just standing there waiting for spots, and she still doesn't even take the spots well. Like, I don't understand why she's there and why she's still there and why they periodically try to push her here. Like, I don't understand that either. But it's she's just so bad, and she's always been bad. And like, I don't see the upside to Tamina. Like, she was they pushed her as the third generation, you know, as a second generation. She's super. The whole thing and the way Superfly is, like, he was going to go to trial for murder, but like he's still incompetent because and like, so now the name's Snook of value. The name Snook was tainted. She hasn't been called Snooka on TV in years. If she was going to get any better, she would have gotten better by now. Like, she is as good as she's going to get. I don't know if the Natty is going to help make Tamina a better star.
It's a hope. It's a long shot. It's a hope. But again, we're talking about not just Natty, but the combination of Natty and Beth, two women who did their time, not just in the WWE, but both. People forget Natty was out there on the indies for a while before she got into the WWE. Beth was out there definitely in the indies before she popped up on a WWE screen. These women both were a different breed of wrestler from the typical stereotypical diva at the time when they came into the WWE. Natty has seen them come and seen them go. So
yeah, no, I love Natty and I love Beth. Tamina's working with them's not going to help make her any better. I don't think they want Tamina to get better. They're to help try to elevate Nia a little bit, because Nia's the one they want because she's still kind of young and she's still only a few years into the business. Nia is the one they want to keep as a longer term superstar. Tamina's I don't lost cause, but she's pretty much a lost cause.
There is, you know, athleticism doesn't necessarily get bestowed upon the next generation just because my father's a world class track star doesn't mean I'm going to be a world class track star. Wrestling is the only business where generations count and people perceive that that is going to happen. She is good for what she is, whether she's the best at what she can do. Maybe that's it. That's all we got. And, you know, there's a lot of other Samoans out there that we can hang our hat on. And when Tamina hangs up the boots, finally, we'll just mark her in the history books as, you know, hey, Snuka had a daughter, and we'll just keep rolling.
All right, well, next up, Vince McMahon was telling the truth. We were going to get a triple threat match for the WWE Championship. Daniel Bryan with Rowan would be defending the WWE Championship versus Kevin Owens and Mustafa Ali, who, by the way, almost died in this match, but fantastic match. My match of the night, absolutely wonderful. Daniel Bryan continues to show why he's the real best in the world. And Kevin Owens, glad to see him back. Mustafa Ali as well. Two guys who, coming back from injuries, are looking like they really haven't lost a step. But Daniel Bryan here, the MVP, he wrestles like no other. And in this role, amazing. Loved everything about it. Of course, almost 20 minutes, Daniel Bryan retains the WWE Championship that he will hold forever.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with you. That was my favorite match of the night as well. Mustafa Ali being in there was the surprise. It's good. And it made sense since Mustafa was supposed to be in the Elimination Chamber and get a title opportunity that he earned. And he had to give that up, which coincidentally spurned the whole Kofi Mania thing. And, you know, Ali gets his championship opportunity. Unfortunately, not successfully. Daniel Bryan beats the tar out of him and Kevin Owens with the help of Rowan, you know, quite a good bit. Good entertaining. Bryan retains and hopefully will hold the belt for a good long time.
We got a triple threat. We got some guy we weren't expecting. And we got the outcome that we were expecting for Daniel Bryan, the new Daniel Bryan, to continue his stranglehold on that title belt that's made of wood, because he is the captain of our planet. Mustafa Ali, I love that he's back, yes, and that he's out there doing 205 Live proud. Kevin Owens doing his thing. But the real story is our planet's champion, Daniel Bryan, is just outwitting everybody and doing what he does. And the carrot that is that Captain Planet title belt is being dangled in front of all of us because we all want to see Kofi Kingston get that opportunity that both Kevin Owens and Mustafa Ali picked up without, quote unquote, earning that spot. So, again, the road is twisty, turny, like a roller coaster, and we're just all on the edge of our seats waiting to see what happens next.
What happened next on the fast lane to WrestleMania was the singles match between Becky Lynch, the man, and Charlotte Flair. Of course, if Becky Lynch won, she would be added to the Raw Women's Championship at WrestleMania. And they seem to have a match, mostly with Becky and the injury, which I don't understand why they play the injury angle, since Becky Lynch was quote-unquote cleared to wrestle. So that didn't make sense. How can you be cleared and still be hobbling around in a with crutches?
You know wrestlers?
They claim, they said she signed one of those agreements a couple of times during the waiver that states that, you know, WWE's not responsible. That's how she was cleared. Yeah. I'm disappointed with as many twists and turns they're throwing in this storyline. I feel it's cooled it off some.
So, with that, Ronda Rousey comes out. And Ronda Rousey attacks Becky Lynch, immediately causing Charlotte Flair to be disqualified. This was Ronda's plan all along, so that Becky Lynch is victorious, so Ronda can beat both Charlotte and Becky.
Full-fledged heel turn of Ronda Rousey, I guess, is kind of what this was. I was surprised how bad the leg Charlotte is when her entire dad's career was based on working the leg. And if you're going to play as to, you know, yet again, you mentioned with the legacy doesn't necessarily mean talent, and I get that, but it, her dad, her every single match he was ever involved, chopping the crap out of guys and then working on the leg. And she was so bad at working on the leg. You know, yet again, I feel with the injury angle and the arrest and like adding the third person, I felt they cooled off with the hottest angle. So at this point, I don't know if that match is going to be the main event of WrestleMania. I'm at Triple H versus Batista could be the one that closes out the show. And it's because they had, you know, in November, this was the hottest thing in the wrestling industry. But so much has been done in the meantime that in stuff that's actually cooled it off while trying to build to it. You know, yes, Becky's there, but Becky's going to be hobbling, and now she's against two heels, and like, yeah. It, I mean, I'm looking less forward to the match now than I was even as few as like several weeks ago. It's just that they by adding the twists and turns in the roller coaster and then also doing almost the exact same storyline with Kofi Kingston, it's kind of, I feel it's kind of cooled both of them off. It's had an adverse effect. I may be in the minority on that, but I just, with Charlotte in there and with Becky going in selling an injury and all this, like, I just don't, I'm not as interested in the match.
Wow, and you love some Becky.
I do, and that's why I'm upset that they're doing all this, because I feel that they don't need to. I feel this is extra stuff. The hype and all this of amazing, and then once they started trying to add extra stuff to it, it waited. That's where I feel that I've become disappointed with the storyline, because. Yeah, that she's got to earn it, and then like Ronda comes out and do it. Now she, you know, then Ronda goes full heel, and you know, like whatever, and yeah, no good from the while to do more to stretch it out, added too much to it. It's kind of feeling sluggish now.
I think it was too much to add a third person to the match, that third person being Charlotte Flair. I think it's scary that the winner of the Royal Rumble does not get their title shot without some kind of weird stipulation. So that was a whole lot of too much. I was wondering if they were going to let Charlotte lose cleanly to Becky, being that she's quote unquote injured. I didn't think so, but I'm kind of glad they went this route to make it a triple threat. The only thing that would make me happier is if somehow Charlotte got out or ousted from this match, because again, she doesn't deserve to be in it. It should be a one-on-one match between Rousey and Lynch, because that was a match we're all clamoring for WrestleMania. We have time, but because of WWE, again, generations, and this is Ric Flair's baby girl, Ric Flair got beat up on his birthday in his home state of Atlanta. I'm sorry, it wasn't Charlotte. Never mind. Anyway, they like her. She's going to be in WrestleMania. She's going to be in that match. Main event, I think they do it. I think they pull the trigger and make it the main event because it is so highly anticipated. And Rousey is that name that they need. I think Brock semi-mains and Rousey main events.
What about Ronda as a heel now? Talking crap to the fans, calling them bandwagon fans. Talking about wrestling is fake. They're all fake. She's gonna prove that, you know, she's better than all of them. Put them all in their places.
It's how you get heel heat in an era of no kayfabe. Okay, you blur the lines. You get the smarks mad at you by saying, you know, by talking trash about wrestling, and we talk and how they did the same thing with, or how they dropped the ball on Eva Marie because she wasn't committed, but how they could have done it. Because how you get the smarks mad at the heel, because most of the smart fans like the heels. They appreciate the heels and the work they do. So the way you get those people really pissed off is by acting like you don't deserve belong to be there, because the fans hold the spots in wrestling as something to be attained. Okay, WWE main event spots, it's something to be attained. If you don't, you know, everybody's worked hard to get there. If you don't respect the position you're in, then step aside and let somebody else come in. So that's how you anger the smart fans. The more casual fans allow themselves to play into the heel and the face. So if she goes out and she talks trash about their local sports team, or she's beating up on somebody that they like better, then she's a heel. She's a bad guy and they'll boo her. But you have to go extra in the world of no kayfabe. So you say, you come out and you call wrestling fake and you say, oh, they're fake and they're not real fighters and I am. Like, that's how you get heel heat, because but now that you this is going to get her resoundingly booed again, where she gets to the booing Monday, who we hadn't seen in a while. Dana Brooke standing up for wrestling and getting beat up. Dana Brooke got a big cheer.
She got a cheer, but Dana Brooke is awful. Of all people in the world, you could have had the lady who serves lunch stand up for wrestling.
You got to start somewhere at the bottom, because you got a lot of time that Ronda's going to beat up schmuck. Okay. But Dana comes out and takes the beating. It were of all the people roster. They could have brought out local, but instead they used Dana. I like the way they're going with it.
Now, the crazy thing for me is that a year ago, Daniel Bryan and Ronda Rousey were the two most popular wrestlers on the roster. And look at them now. They're like two of the top heels, and the fans are buying into it.
Nobody ever really stays heel or face for extended periods of time anymore. Everybody kind of flip-flops pretty quickly. It's just the nature of the beast. For years, we don't do heels and face. We don't do heels and face. We do characters. And characters are sometimes bad. But career faces and career heels are less than even majority career heels or majority career faces are much less common these days.
I really enjoyed the work they're doing. See what's going on. Man, will we see Ronda Rousey past WrestleMania? The rumors are still all over the place. We'll see what happens. But one person who's been rumored to be gone sooner than later is Dean Ambrose. And he is in the main event as the Shield is back together again. Maybe for the last time. As Ambrose, Rollins, and Reigns defeat Baron Corbin, Bobby Lashley, and Drew McIntyre. Almost 25 minutes. It's basically a Shield match to make the crowd happy here, to leave Fastlane excited for Roman Reigns and for WrestleMania. And indeed, that's what happens here. The Shield victorious once again, maybe for the last time.
But for the fact that over the course of the night they said one last time, they said that over 900 times, that leads me to believe it's probably not the last time. We were also told that John Cena versus The Rock was once in a lifetime, and then a year later we got the same exact match. We were also told that Triple H versus the inner Hell in a Cell versus a referee was the end of an era. Less than 6 months ago, we saw all three of those guys in the ring together again. I still am not entirely convinced that the whole Dean Ambrose not re-signing thing isn't just a work storyline to try to get interest, because yet again, you have to blur the lines now because everybody's reading the dirt sheet so much. So you have to put stuff out there, you know? And so maybe he hasn't re-signed. So officially, but have a contract waiting for him to sign at a certain point. So where they can do that, you know, like they can, yet again, it's wrestling. You create the fiction. But I do think that since, you know, Roman just heard from his cancer battle, you know, they want to do the Shield thing and have a happy moment before, you know, maybe they push them away in different bio creatively. Since they said one last time, repeatedly to the point where I was hit with a hammer, it leads me to believe that it's not the last time. May not even be the last time for the next few months. We might get them again at WrestleMania. Who knows? We might get them again before WrestleMania. You know, I wouldn't have been surprised if they said one last time and then the next night on Raw, we got them teaming together again.
I think that the WWE would not dare tell us such a falsehood. If they say one last time, clearly they mean one last time, because Dean Ambrose is going to leave the WWE and become Jon Moxley and give us the person that we were hoping that he would be when he signed to the E. Yeah, that's a hope. That's a straight up hope and a pipe dream, I know. But I think that the happy story, like you said, about Roman beating his leukemia, beating his cancer, coming back, putting the band back together, that goes probably until whatever this April date is. That's the magical expiration date for one Dean Ambrose. And at that time, if he leaves, which again is the real question, Roman and Seth kind of, you know, go off their separate ways. But I'm not too sure that Roman is not doing this to have a farewell. I don't want to wish that he's sick or anything, but, you know, beating cancer is, or cancer treatments, I'm not an expert, I'm not a doctor, but man, it's a toll on the body. And him coming back to wrestle a full-time WWE schedule may not be something that is a possibility to keep a healthy prognosis right now. I don't know. So this farewell could be a real farewell, not so much for Ambrose, but for Reigns.
Interesting theory. I mean, yeah, it does take a toll on your body. And, you know, if you get that kind of scare again and again, maybe you start realizing I need to, you know, not put my body through such a beating and the full-time wrestling schedule and these kind of things. But I agree that it could be the last time with him, and, you know, that's an interesting theory. We'll have to see if that plays out at all.
So what you're saying is this may not be the end of Dean Ambrose, because, you know, WWE, you know, they love to swerve people. And I mean, who knows, right? Time will tell, but WWE talking about it so much, yeah, red flags. But it'll be interesting to see what happens. So overall, I was happy with the show. Overall, the whole entire show did not blow me away. There were some great things. There were some dud things. There were some memorable and unmemorable things. So I'm going with a B+ on this show. I think that as great as the WWE Championship match was, not enough to carry most of the rest of the show to a memorable A. So I'm giving this show a B+. They tried. They did a very good job. Got me excited for the WrestleMania.
I have to even go lower than that. I have to go a B. And it's because the show just, nothing really, you know, even with the WWE title match, nothing really blew us away. But it, to me, it didn't really feel like anything different than a regular episode of TV. You had all the backstage stuff, and you had Elias come out 4 separate times just to run down the local sports teams for a minute and then disappear. Only the 4th time, Orton come out and RKO him, and then AJ come and hit him, and then that segment ends. Like, they jumped around from stuff so much, and they did the backstage stuff, and just with so many multi-mans and scrambles and every high energy, and it just, it was tiring show. I'm more and more aggravated with the WWE commentary style with a 3-man team. You have the straight guy in the middle who's just like, you know, generic guy in a suit. They can replace him with anybody. The baby face and then the heel. And while the guy in the middle is calling moves, the other two guys are yelling at each other and arguing. And to me, that takes away from the show and the enjoyment of the show, rather than adding to it. So with that, and the matches, and just so many scrambles, I just felt tired as the show went on. By the time the main event came on, I was like exhausted and just ready for the show to be over, which is absolutely not what you want, especially not a feel you want during your main event, the match you've been building to. So I have to give it a B. And judging by this week's Raw and SmackDown, it seems that that's kind of the same format we're going to get leading on to WrestleMania. You know, you could definitely tell we're on the road to WrestleMania because it was a bunch of talk segments and a bunch of flashbacks and you know, not a lot of in-ring action leading the stories. It was a bunch of talking, trying to lead and build to the stories, and why you did this at Fastlane, and why are you doing this at Mania? So, like, I'm Mania, but to me, it seems like a very exhausting, uninteresting road unless some things change.
Wow. I guess I'll give it a B+. It could have been better by all rights and means. So that's why we have this time before Mania that hopefully the Raws and the SmackDowns leading up will get us more revved up that Mania is going to be the spectacle that it should be. Fastlane was solid, but it was not a overwhelmingly good pay-per-view.
Are you tired of the same old pro wrestling? Then check out the amazing action on Powerslam.tv, the biggest indie pro wrestling channel in the world. Get over 4,000 hours of the best pro wrestling events from over 110 of the biggest names in the industry from over 15 countries around the globe. Get your free trial today at Powerslam.tv.
All right, so that was Fastlane. A couple of things now before we wrap up. The Hall of Fame Class 2019 is getting filled up. Of course, we already know that we have the X, the Generation X, and the Honky Tonk Man as the first two inductees. Now added, In the women's category, Tori Wilson, of course, we know her from her days in WCW, and then she was a part of the WCW invasion in the WWE. They went on to have her career, finishing up with the WWE, and yeah, that also landed her on the Playboy cover while she was with WWE, when that was an okay thing to do.
She also killed Don Murray's dad.
And for the tag teams, we get the Harlem Heat, Booker T, and Stevie Ray. So Booker T will be joining Shawn Michaels and Ric Flair as the only two-time inductees in the Hall of Fame. Harlem Heat, of course, made their fame in WCW. They were a dominant tag team in the mid-90s. And I think if you had to pick any tag teams, this was a pretty darn good one. Of course, that means the Anvil's not getting in this year, but maybe next year when they're in Florida, we'll see the Hart Foundation get in. But yes, your thoughts now, Tori Wilson and Harlem Heat joining the 2019 Hall of Fame class.
I mean, Tori Wilson, you know, a lot of people have been saying she doesn't really deserve to be in there and all this. And what did she do? She wasn't that good of a wrestler. And like, but she was in, you know, the Monday Night Wars, into the Attitude Era, into some of the Divas Era. Like, she was a main character, you know, for a lot of years on television. She wrestled some. She did the bra and panties and all this. But everybody did in that era. And so, you know, you can't just because it's not cool now doesn't mean you can't, you know, you doesn't mean that the work she did to help carry things. You know, and she still can work as a good ambassador for the company, you know, to go out and do things and kind of talk about, yes, things were done this way when I was there, but as things in other professional sports and in other parts of our culture have changed, so is WWE. It's different now. Like, so I, you know, deserves to be in there just as much as anybody, realistically. The rules they set, Harlem Heat, I, you know, yet again, another one. I was not the biggest Harlem Heat fan. I remember really being a big Booker T fan, but definitely wasn't a big Harlem Heat fan. But, you know, they were an extremely dominant and powerful tag team for a lot of years. You know, I had long standing wars with us. You know, they stayed incarnations of the NWO, and they had their things towards the end of WCW where they split, and Booker T was G.I. Bro, and he was Stevie Ray, and Big T, and they fought him for the right of T, and that was kind of weird. But you know, I mean, they were a very powerful and dominant tag team for a lot of years, and so I think they deserve the recognition for the work they put in, and the really the only place that, you know, you can do that now is the WWE Hall of Fame, and Booker T. Now it gets, you know, we'll have a ring.
People need to stop hating on Tori Wilson. Leave Tori alone. I stand for Tori Wilson, okay? You want to talk about historic and history, iconic divas, queens. Tori Wilson was an all-American girl next door who was athletic and beautiful and kind and sexy. She could be any and everything, and she got into the ring and she mixed it up. She walked around in, like, you know, these hot little outfits. I mean, Playboy and all of the side, just the personality alone that came through from WCW to WWE. A lot of people were talking about, I've seen on social media, like, well, she never even held a championship. Tori got severely injured wrestling, and had a neck injury that a lot of people don't know about. It's not widely talked about. But Tori was that woman that they were going to put a title on. But was it her neck or her back? I can't remember. Her neck. Her back. Now I'm confused. I believe it was her back. Whatever. Whatever her injury was, it was her back. Did not allow her to continue wrestling to where they needed or wanted a champion to be. But she is iconic. She's a diva. She's a life coach. Like you said, she can be a great ambassador for the WWE brand because she's always been a great ambassador for the brand and has not had any scandals or anything bad. She's not getting locked up like other Hall of Famers. Just, again, a good businesswoman and person to have represent the brand as she goes forward and they go forward. Harlem Heat, a little surprising, but I understand. I get it. If they find a way to make Booker T a five-time WWE Hall of Famer, I will die laughing. I can at least think of another way that he could be in there, but I don't know. Stevie Ray and Booker T, you know, sometimes in tag teams, ask Marty Jannetty, you get left behind. And this is a way I think that the WWE is recognizing Stevie Ray's contributions and Stevie Ray not getting left behind. So I'm here for it. We all said that tonight, so I'm here for that.
And on Monday night in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Kurt Angle announced that WrestleMania 35 will be where he will be having his farewell match, his retirement match. He's calling it quits. He can no longer perform at the Kurt Angle level that he used to. And understandably so. So he's deciding to go out on his own terms. Who will his opponent be? That has yet to be determined. I think one of my picks is to be one of the favorites is John Cena. I think that would be a nice throwback to Cena's first match in the main roster in WWE against Kurt Angle. It would be a great choice, a classy one. But Kurt Angle, a man who has accomplished everything he needs to accomplish, 100% deserves to go out, you know, in his own, when he can, in his own terms. So, you know, he's already a Hall of Famer, and he's done everything. He doesn't need to do anything else. And I think that, you know, it's a great way in New York to call it a career, whoever his opponent may be.
I'm glad they're going to finally give him a send-off. This is my last match ever kind of thing. Like, people say that, and then it'll be just kind of lets you quietly have your last match, and then your contract's done and you disappear. So the fact that they're letting him do this kind of says a lot too, to how the, you know, how they value him. Yes. So of course the first thing is names that pop up. I think some people would like to see the Undertaker again. I think, yeah, John Cena would make a good fit, you know, but John Cena's got to slap him in the face and say ruthless aggression or it doesn't count. You know, I mean, Brock Lesnar, of course, would be a good opponent for him, as they had, you know, a lot of good just together, but Brock, the show. So I think Cena's probably, unless give him a younger guy, give him somebody like a Drew McIntyre or, you know, even maybe Bobby Lashley, a younger guy that Kurt can kind of do a lot with and kind of give the rub to on his way out, rather than John Cena, who himself is just a part-timer because his acting career is taking off. So you give him the rub, and then the rub kind of dissolves because John's not there as frequently. So I don't know, you know, if Kurt's going to lose on his last match, even if he doesn't, a strong showing against somebody, you know, it I think would still be really good. So, you know, I don't know how long they're going to tease us around to see it before they reveal who his final opponent was. You know, he got to battle one of his former teammates and proteges as Shelton came out and he wrestled Shelton on Monday. So we'll see what what Kurt has for his last match.
It'll be John Cena, Shelton Benjamin, and Charlie Haas will stop making babies to come out and just send Kurt off the way you send off Olympic hero with a broken freaking neck. No, I'm sorry. I kid. I don't want that to happen. It was great that Kurt got to kind of, it seemed like he's getting to dictate the terms of him retiring. Before he left the WWE for the first time, it seemed like the terms of him stopping were based on his body, you know, not quite being what the WWE needed him to be, clean, sober, healthy, what have you. Now that seems like it's happening and he can go out and an Olympic blaze of glory, so to speak. So it doesn't matter the opponent. Kurt Angle has been a solid performer in a WWE, in Impact / TNA. Just wherever he's been, it's been a great thing to see. And now we get to watch him ride off in the sunset, not like The Undertaker, where we see him rise from the dead and he's zombie-like. Kurt is still looking like $1 million, and that's how we should remember him in the wrestling format.
Great stuff. Can't wait to see when they announce his opponent and see the rest of the card. It's heating up. The road to WrestleMania. We're almost there. Less than a month away for the biggest show of the year. And we'll be talking more and more about it as we get more things official. But it's shaping up to be a great card. And a lot more to talk about soon. So everybody make sure you check out this episode, all the episodes on FOW Radio Network. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, TuneIn, Google Play, and check us out on the Twitter machine at FOW Radio. Danny's on Twitter at DannyFNDanger. Mika's on Twitter at Mika Villas. I'm on Twitter at Yellowman. Thanks for listening, and until next time, keep watching wrestling.